right, welcome in Course of Life, week four of 2019, Mike. It's full on winter storm recovery for pretty much anyone who is north or east of us. Sorry, not sorry to them up there in the frigid cold. Mike, it was a crazy Sunday for myself between the Patriots and the golf. I had myself quite a sports weekend glued to the TV.
Yeah, you know, we'll have a lot to talk about when we get to football. Let's talk about the golf. Let's talk about what happened on the 18th green.
Yes, Desert Classic last Sunday. This was a bettor's heartbreak for myself. If you were tracking me at Course of Life 1 on Twitter, I had previously bet on Adam Hadwin. I picked five or six guys in these 156-man fields, Mike. So I'm only picking five or six guys. And lo and behold, Adam Hadwin, my 28-1 odds pick, was leading down the stretch, dueling it out with Phil Mickelson. They were going birdie for birdie. He gets in at 25 under total, Mike. And lo and behold, he's beat by a shot, a long shot, quite literally, Mike. An unheard of player named Adam Long birdied the 72nd and final hole of the tournament to win outright, snaking past Phil and my pick, Adam Hadwin, by a shot. This was all happening literally right as the AFC Championship game was starting as well during the frenzy of the Saints and Rams game, which we'll get to later. So it was just a crazy culmination of events on Sunday, and I just missed out on that second victory of 2019.
Well, you know, it's still early in the season.
Early. Good sign there, though, with the close call. And Justin Rose as well, decent week. He was the only other guy I picked pre-week who did make the cut. He finished 14 under for the week as well.
Not a bad thing. And now we get to move into Tiger Woods' debut this coming weekend at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. You being the resident Tiger Woods super fan, how do you think he's going to do this weekend?
Well, he's got a decent pairing. It's funny, Tony Finau has never played with Tiger Woods in a competitive round, and all the time that both of them have been out on tour and played in events. So that pairing is coming together, along with our guy, Xander Schauffele, who won a couple weeks ago and got me that first win in Kapalua out in Hawaii. So that's a good little threesome to follow Thursday and Friday out in San Diego. And this is a course Tiger knows and loves. He literally grew up in this venue. Of course, he had the historic 2008 U.S. Open victory at this very same course, Mike, the South Course, when he hobbled on one leg to that heroic victory in the playoff over Rocco Media. Mm-hmm. So he has a lifelong history of this course. So you'd have to expect he's going to make the cut. And I'm going to give him a finish somewhere in the top 20 or 30. I don't think he's going to be contending deep into Sunday, but I think you're going to see a lot of his game from 2018 translate over into 2019 in his first official start.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he can play as well as Phil did after the match and just come out strong play
60?
Really well. Jesus. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see. So let's talk about your picks for this weekend at the Farmers Insurance Open. Who are your favorites right now?
Yeah, and it's hard. It's like it's one of those things when you're betting only a handful of guys, Mike. You can't just keep going back to the same exact guys week in, week out. You know, I'm tempted to pick Hadwin again after that close call, but a few guys that I'm going to give out right here, and you'll see the rest of my Twitter. I'm leading with the favorite, and I don't usually pick the biggest outright favorite, Mike, but this is a guy who's won at this venue, and he's already played well as of last week, and that's John Rahm at 10-1. My second pick is a guy who I bet way too often and I'm always wrong on, but I want to be right on, and that's Mark Leishman at 23-1, the Aussie. And then my long shot, Mike, this is a guy who we're going to be there for his first victory, and I know it's going to come out of nowhere. He's a University of Texas grad that has roots to Austin, where I am now. His name is Bo Hostler. He's a young PGA Tour pro, and he's 140-1 odds to win at Torrey Pines this week. So those are three of my picks. You'll get the rest of them on my Twitter at Course of Life One, and follow along and see if we can't get that elusive second win. We came real close.
Yeah,
last week.
My other close. My other question, though, is are you going to be including one of the top players in the world, Justin Rose, who finished tied for fourth in 2017, tied for eighth in 2018 at Torrey Pines, and you know he's playing well after last weekend. Is he going to be in your picks for this weekend?
I don't quite know if I'm seeing the form that I need out of him. He was solid last week, but it was a birdie fest for everybody. So his 14 under par relative to the score in the field really only got him a finish like in the top 30. So he wasn't exactly at the top of the leaderboard with that performance. You know, it was birdies for everyone last week. So, you know, Rose is a guy I'm still pondering here as we lead into Thursday's start. But he's definitely got the form to win at least once or twice on tour this year. Just not sure if it's going to be at a venue that requires not only precision, but really good short game around the greens. And this course is pretty demanding in that. So that's what I'm looking at when I make these picks for this week.
All right. Well, we'll see how you do. I'm sure you'll win another one eventually.
Yeah, I'm going. My goal is three, Mike. I think I was thinking I could get three wins this year, and I got one right off the bat, so I was spoiled rotten there. We'll talk about my other win on Sunday as well that I did get to disparage that suckout loss by Adam Hadwin there. But a couple other things in golf to note as we look forward to the next couple of weeks, Mike. One guy who's on vacation, and I'm going to post this photo as soon as I get off with you, is Brooks Koepka, and he is really living it up in all the wildest ways, Mike. He posted an absolutely hilarious photo of him in what I can only describe as a Speedo / thong that was just cut way too thin alongside his girlfriend. And it's a weird photo, and you'll see it on my Twitter as well. And just don't look too hard with both eyes. It's quite disturbing. So
I mean, you may be flagged for inappropriate content. So
I might. You're right. Let's see if the flag comes down on that one, and I'll keep you updated on that as well. And then the one other thing we discussed last week, our guy Ho Sung Choi with the crazy fisherman swing, Mike. He's gone viral already playing on the Asian tour. He's making his PGA Tour debut in 2 weeks. He posted a video in some broken English. He's excited to come over here. We're excited for him, and not before this week with Tiger, and next week the party in Scottsdale at the Waste Management. So a good run of events here coming up on the West Coast.
It certainly is, and we'll talk all about it. And also next week we'll have an interview with a good friend of mine who's going to tell us all about working in sports television and setting up for games, which will be a lot of fun. Next week we'll also talk about the Super Bowl. But first, after this break, we'll talk about what happened on Sunday during those two overtime games. A lot to talk about. We'll be right back after this. And we're back here on Course of Life. It's time to talk football. And Alex, let's talk about this past weekend, the overtime games, the officiating in particular, because in one game, the officials were able to change the outcome, and in the other, they weren't. Of course, I'm talking about that missed pass interference call.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this was so egregious and so bad. And the NFL offices even admitted that they were wrong after they were called right after the game was over. What does this mean about officiating in the NFL?
That was a rough look. And if you're a Saints fan, you have all the right reasons to be pretty heated. I mean, listen, the Saints did pee away some games to win that, some opportunities to win that game on their own. But the fact of the matter is they were really close to icing that game when that penalty was not called. And it would have been a crucial change in the field position. And it would have moved them literally feet from the goal line. They would have been able to wrap things up on their own terms instead of having to give the ball back, which they did to the Rams. And the Rams took it from there. And you saw how it finished in overtime. So, yeah, a really tough go for the Saints, considering the season they put together with Drew Brees at the helm and just kind of the way that fan base rallied around that team this season. It was kind of an unfortunate way for the game to end in New Orleans. And yeah, they got reason to be pissed, but it's, you know, having been a fan of a team who's been on both sides of the coin many times now, because of all these games that we've seen, it's just the way it rolls, and you're going to get some of those balls and the bounces and the calls to go your way, and just sometimes you're just not at the wrong time. So it's the hard reality of the situation.
It really is. And on the flip side, in the AFC Championship game, we had the Chiefs getting away with what really probably should have been called pass interference at least once during that second half, somewhere in there with the contact that was going on. And really, Brady even arguably losing the game a couple times, and then getting a couple calls to go his way still at the same time. And Brady and the Patriots almost losing it, only to rally back and do what Brady and the Patriots do best, which is just go to the Super Bowl, because this is now Super Bowl number 9 for Tom Brady.
That's unbelievable.
He's going to be to more Super Bowls than any other franchise.
Except
the Patriots.
Him himself as a franchise. Yeah, pretty much is what that boils down to. And it is just ridiculous. I've spoken time and time again about myself being a lifelong Patriots fan, but being fully aware as to just how spoiled we are during this run. It's been absolutely ridiculous. And as I was watching the winning drive and the three times Brady converted on third down in overtime as they marched down the field and scored that winning touchdown, I've just seen this too many times. I'm just wondering when it's not going to happen, but it keeps happening. And I just want to yell to that Chiefs defense, double and triple team Edelman and Gronk. These are the guys that we go to in the big moments. And sure enough, they came through in addition to Brady. It's really unbelievable what they were able to do at Arrowhead Stadium. It was a fantastic finish. And it's just, the guy has balls of steel, and he showed it again, even at the age of 41, and they're back in the Super Bowl. So a fantastic finish to that game, dual overtime finish, Mike, and a home run for the NFL getting those two semifinals matchups like that.
Yeah, you know, I really personally would have loved to see a Drew Brees, Tom Brady matchup in the Super Bowl. I think that would have been just an utter shootout and would have been phenomenal to see. This is still not a bad way to go with a young quarterback like Goff and the Rams going against Brady. And of course, we'll bring up the factoid that everyone's already heard a million times before, which is, who did Brady play in his first Super Bowl? The Rams.
Exactly. There's a lot of full circle things coming, Mike. And if you really want to go deep into the conspiracy theory trove and you want to go down that watering hole and find the depths of YouTube and see what's really up, there's some talk that if Tom Brady wins this Super Bowl against the Rams and bookends his career with Super Bowl victories against the Rams, he could walk away from the game on top, a la John Elway or Peyton Manning. So I don't think that's impossible. I think it's extremely unlikely with the way his drive has been recently and how he's expressed that he wants to play another few seasons. But there's a lot of interesting storylines heading into this game. We're going to talk a ton more about the game itself next week. let's talk about the stuff all around it, Mike. It's Super Bowl weekend. It's in Atlanta. You're in Georgia yourself. I'm just going to say it, Mike. You know me. I'm a guy that's traveled to Patriots Super Bowls just to be there for the weekend in Houston and Scottsdale, Arizona, because those are fun cities to go to. Atlanta does not get my juices flowing as a Super Bowl city, despite the brand spanking new stadium they built there.
No, and if you remember the last time Atlanta hosted a Super Bowl, the city was shut down because of an ice storm. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Atlanta in 2 weeks to make sure the weather stays clear. But I'm not really looking to go there. There's a lot of pushback right now around the city because just the music selection of the halftime show is not true Atlanta.
I'm okay with Maroon 5. You're right. It's not true Atlanta, though. They mixed in Travis Scott and Big Boy of Outkast to attempt to give it a little Atlanta hip hop flair. We'll see how that kind of plays within a Maroon 5 halftime show. I'm not really sure. But, I'm curious.
The halftime shows are always weird. It's kind of become that thing where you just kind of sit and watch, and at the end, you're either going to go, oh, that was awesome, or it's just going to be like, okay, that was kind of weird. I feel like it is that sense where we're trying to cram different kinds of music together, and to me, it's a stretch sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes more like memed and gifed than anything. Like, you have the Lady Gaga moment, and just, you know, it literally flying out of the building, like, spontaneously, and like that's kind of the moment you remember from her show. And then you obviously have the old moment with Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. It's like there's just it's really, there aren't really any many times when you look back at a Super Bowl halftime show and go, wow, that was an amazing performance because of X, Y, and Z. You really just find a couple of crazy moments that tend to stick out in the months and years after. So that's the show. We'll be watching that. We'll talk next week about the over under for the national anthem and God Bless America, the really important bets that have to be discussed next week. We have a leaked commercial, Mike. I saw a trailer for a Doritos commercial. Of course, Doritos coming with the typical Super Bowl commercial. They have Chance the Rapper as the sixth member of the Backstreet Boys. So that should be an interesting one. I think that's going to get some laughs. Commercial headline, CBS rejecting medical marijuana ads, but more than comfortable with airing dozens of ads about hard alcohol and beer consumption to the max. That's totally cool.
We gotta make sure we're not getting all the people happy with the kind of ads that are going on there. So it's certainly gonna be interesting. The one thing that I think is really sad, though, is that the fans that are going to be at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the Super Bowl won't be able to get their Chick-fil-A.
Oh, Sunday.
Yes. Yeah. There's a Chick-fil-A. You just can't get it. You can't get it. It's not going to happen. It's just depressing.
That's just sad because the concessions are going to be so locked and loaded for a Super Bowl. And you're just going to have an empty, black, dark caged Chick-fil-A. It's so sad.
I will say the one thing is that if you're traveling through the Atlanta area, just go to Zaxby's. It's still really good. So you can still get your fried chicken fix.
There's the note from Georgia. Should be an interesting entertainment setup around Super Bowl 53. Yep. Dun-dun-dun. The Bad Boys, the Patriots are back. Mike, how about that? How'd you like that little Instagram vid from Brady and Gronk that they ended up the plane in Kansas City? That was just, without saying a word, they just said so much about how every fan in the NFL feels about the Patriots being back in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's just business as usual for the Patriots. We will break it all down next week for sure about what's going to go down in the Super Bowl and what we think will happen. Let's turn our attention real quick. Let's talk our alma mater. Let's talk Quinnipiac, like we always like to do real quick. Meds Ice Hockey had a good win at Boston University. We're now ranked number 6 in both major polls. So good for us there. Women's basketball won both games this weekend and had a really crazy drive home from Buffalo on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. They got absolutely drilled with snow. Yeah. That must have been quite a heroic effort for them to get back.
They supposedly were delayed a few hours getting out of Buffalo, and then they had to stop every 90 minutes so that a coach could get out and scrape down the windshield of the bus because it was getting iced over. But they got back to Hampton okay. It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, Mike, I had one heroic bus ride back from St. Francis, Pennsylvania to Quinnipiac, following a basketball game. It was a January night, and it was a 6.5 hour bus ride. Ooh. And 45 minutes into the bus ride, the heating unit totally frayed and went out. So we spent the remainder of the bus ride huddled up in every blanket and hoodie and sweatshirt and piece of clothing we could find. That was an absolutely miserable night. So I empathize with anyone who has to go through those bus rides in the winter. That's the closest thing to like freezing in hell that you could find on Earth.
That's pretty horrible. That's pretty bad. But everyone's back safe and okay, so we're good there. Let's turn our attention to one more thing. Let's talk a little baseball, because it is Tuesday the 22nd right now, and earlier this evening, the Hall of Fame induction class of 2019 was announced, and my boy from the New York Yankees, Mariano Rivera, the best closer of all time, unanimous, 100%, first person ever to get in with unanimous voting. I mean, this guy had, and we can run down the stats all we want and talk about how amazing he was, his .7 ERA over 96 appearances and 141 innings in the postseason.
Unbelievably dominant. It's pretty unquestionable that he was the greatest closer of all time. If not, he is on the Mount Rushmore of that list of guys to come in to end a ball game. Amazing to think that he started with a measly, like, few $1,000 contract coming into the league and came into the league as a starter and failed miserably and briefly and then realigned and became a relief pitcher and ended with a Hall of Fame career as a closer. And all you need to know about Mariano Rivera's success as a Yankee is if the Red Sox fandom gives you an ovation in your final seasons and appearances at Fenway, that's how you know you've done something. And the only people who've gotten that recently have been him and Derek Jeter. That's how you know you're a Yankee that's truly done something in baseball, when you're getting the adoration of even your deepest enemies.
And this actually draws a bigger question, and we were talking about this briefly during our break, like Rivera unanimous getting in there. There's only two other guys you think about who probably deserve a unanimous or could deserve a unanimous selection in the Hall. One is already in and was just barely missed. That was Ken Griffey Jr. With over 99% of the vote and wasn't unanimous.
Basically unanimous, yeah.
And Derek Jeter to me is the other guy who you know is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but is he going to be unanimous? He's still that guy who was out there grinding all the time. He didn't finish his career real well, but just what he's meant to baseball, is he going to be another unanimous guy to get into the Hall?
Yeah, it's hard to compare, you know, the way Rivera's career arc is compared to Jeter's and how statistics compare with a pitcher versus a hitter getting in. So I don't really know if Jeter's are unanimous hitter stats, but I sure hope he is based on his legacy and impact on the game.
Yeah. The other guys that get into the Hall this year, Edgar Martinez, longtime player with the Mariners for his entire career. Mike Mussina, another. Nah,
totally sold on Mussina.
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, he was a great pitcher for the Orioles and the Yankees, did a lot of great things. Is he a Hall of Famer? Well, he is now, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And the other one to talk about is, of course, the late, great Roy Halladay. Just amazing what he did in his career, where he was a first round pick, got up into the majors and then couldn't do a thing, had to go all the way back down to Class A, rebuild himself, became one of the best pitchers in the league. And now, unfortunately, possibly he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
And fond memories of him, Mike, too, because he was a fantasy baseball legend back when I first got into the game in high school. When I had my first fantasy teams, he was perennially one of the first pitchers drafted and just an absolute horse in his dominant seasons in baseball.
Yeah, and also to us who grew up in New England, knowing the Toronto Blue Jays just over the border, we knew a lot about Roy Halladay for his 12 seasons with the Jays. So great to see him get into the Hall as well, certainly deserving. And we're going to be talking a lot more about baseball because we're like less than a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
It's eerie. A nice little tease. I do give baseball credit for the timing of that announcement. Just kind of pops that reminder in your head that, yes, football is coming to an end, so we need to come to peace with that in the next couple of weeks. However, spring training is right around the corner. So just, you know, take a couple breaths and take that in. And yes, we do have a spring training interview coming up in the pipeline. So you get to hear from someone in play-by-play in Major League Baseball who will talk about the upcoming season. So we'll have that coming up as we get closer to pitchers and catchers. Should be an exciting time as baseball fans rejoice.
Yeah, we're certainly looking forward to it. Let's talk real quick about Super Bowl menus. We're still a little way away, but what are you thinking in terms of what you want to eat come Super Bowl Sunday?
Well, this is tricky because my mom taught me as I was younger is she used to like to go based on the city and would cook as a tribute to the city. So for New Orleans Super Bowl, she would go Cajun and make a jambalaya.
Yeah.
A Super Bowl in the Southwest, she would do some Southwestern spicy cuisine. Mike, what is Atlanta and Georgia foods? what do you do in that scenario? Just something with peaches, or you got to give me a little bit of guidance here. Are there directions to go as a tribute to an Atlanta Super Bowl?
I mean, if you're going to go Atlanta, if you're going to go Georgia in general, you think peaches and you think of pecans, and besides that, I think you just go kind of good old mainstay fried chicken. So
that.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong. Now, like we already said, you can't go get yourself some Chick-fil-A, but there's certainly you just make your own home fried chicken, put in some collard greens or something, make yourself maybe a pecan pie or a peach cobbler or something for dessert. It's not bad. Yeah,
that and a Boston tribute. Maybe I'll be cooking up a clam chowder or maybe some chips and dip or something like that. I don't quite have the money for lobsters. No, maybe just stick to chowder. And it's going to be go Pats, and we'll talk next week about the game specifically. So we'll have the full Super Bowl preview in addition to Tigers' return to the game, the party in Scottsdale, Super Bowl week, and a whole bunch more on the next episode of Course of Life. We'll talk to you later.